PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Brandon Sowell. He is responsible for T-Box Strategy, which has a great connection to Well MXS or Well Mix. We're still sort of defining the name here. It's kind of fun in the pre-shot, but Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Big THP community fan.
Yeah, we've had an awesome connection to WMX Grips or Well Mix or Well MXS, depending on people want to define it. I'd love to start the show today by giving you an opportunity to explain what your role is with the group and maybe what T-Box Strategy is.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got a marketing agency that specializes in supporting various golf brands. My history has been within the golf industry for over 25 years now, which feels like a blink of an eye this day and time. But I support kind of smaller niche brands out there. And WMX is one of the brands that I help oversee the marketing activities for. And to your point, speaking of the name, just to take that head on, they basically, their official name is Well Mix, is how they pronounce the Well MXS. And that came from a background of the founder wanting to combine wellness mixed with sport, which was what kind of inspired the lineup that they introduced. But if you notice, I know a lot of the community has had a chance to try the grips. On the grips, there's the initials WMX. And so I think that's a little bit of an easier brand name for us that we're geared towards for the U.S. Side of the business, and seems to be a good fit.
It's pretty funny how deeply connected people get to the different brands, the logos that I've had plenty of people on the show talk about with pride their logos. And usually it comes with clarity and this sort of desperation for people to really connect to it. And anytime I see that logo now, since we've had such great discussions on THP, and I had a chance to try them a couple weeks ago while I was on the range at Grable. And it's like, man, as soon as you see that logo, you're like, okay, I can't wait to try this because there's so many people talking about them and getting really excited about it. Before we go too much into that, though, you mentioned 25 years in the golf industry. Listen, man, I do a little bit of research. I try to anyway before the show. I see that you have some great depth in the industry. And I always love to ask this question to folks who come on who've been around for a while. What's your take on overall golf industry and how things have changed? Do you feel like it's a lot different than when you started, or did it go on the trajectory you thought it would?
That's a great question. I don't know that I've gone back to the beginning of my beginnings, if you will. I started off, I worked at the golf course when I was in high school, all through college. You know, I was the cart attendant picking up the range. To me, it's interesting. I find it kind of personally humorous that I used to be the guy that would drive around the range picker out on the cart, and everybody's trying to zing balls at you and hit you and all that kind of stuff. And now we've got robots out there driving those around. It's become more automated, so it's been fun to watch that evolution. But so in that way, you know, there's definitely been a lot of technological changes, you know, whether it's within equipment or, you know, even just facility operations, those kinds of things, which has been great to see. Probably the biggest thing that I've seen has been the COVID boom that we all lived through and still seem to have an elevation of participation these days, which that was, you know, going back to, you know, early 2000s, pre-2000s, you know, all the way up until 2020, it was like, how are we going to grow the game? You know, we need to get more people engaged. And then COVID was a unexpected boost to the game in terms of participation. And, you know, it's leveled off. I'd say now that we've received that boost in participation, it's leveled back off to what it used to be, meaning, okay, now what, you know, kind of thing. And we're going to add more courses, or now from an equipment standpoint, the equipment companies seem to be back to a market share, you know, chasing market share from each other. It's not the COVID boom, you know, everybody was kind of hand to mouth on product, and that was a different thing, but that's quickly kind of gone back to things have settled back into a new normal post the COVID boom. So it'll be interesting to see how things shake out, but certainly technologically, whether it be equipment or facility operations, that's probably been the biggest change, but that's, you know, quite honestly, that's probably true for any industry, from TVs and computers to anything we might do. So, but it's been a fun journey. I've worked for a few different brands. Started off at Dunlop back in the early 2000s, back when it still was a trio of brands of Dunlop and Maxfli and Slazenger. Yeah, it's funny now today, Maxfli being owned by Dick's Sporting Goods and seeing the transitions of those brands through the years. Spent some time at Bridgestone Golf as well, back when they kickstarted the Bridgestone Golf brand. You know, some of your audience or some of the audience might be familiar with Precept, which was Bridgestone's been in golf for a long time, but it had been under the Precept umbrella prior to, I think, about 2005 is when we launched it. So Bridgestone Golf is really, you know, kind of young if you think about it in terms of a, you know, marketed under the Bridgestone brand. And then did spend some time at Golf Pride as well too, on the grip side. So I've got a big depth of injection molded rubber compounds and rubber materials is kind of a lot of the background that I've worked on throughout that 25 years.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a pretty wild change in the way people look at things, and one of the biggest components of that is that sort of golf club customization component, which I think is going to be a great part of our conversation today, in that WMX has an insane level of customization from a grip perspective. I think back to when I was a kid playing junior golf, no one talked about grips the way they do now. I mean, obviously the materials are a little bit different, but at the same time, there was always the gold standard, and people didn't really stray that far from it. And we've seen a lot of versions of that change over the years. And I'd love to wrap that into the marketing side, since that's a big component of your story with them. I assume that marketing's gotten a lot more fun when it comes to something like a grip.
It definitely has. I think, you know, it's interesting. The grip category, for whatever reason, it seems to be one that gets forgotten about. You know, if you just step back for a moment, you know, any golf club is going to be made up of three core things. It's going to be the head, the shaft, and the grip. And for whatever reason, you know, the grip, maybe it's the least sexiest part of those three pieces or whatever, you know, whatever you might say about it, but it tends to get forgotten. And I don't know if part of that, you know, kind of leads to what you were saying of, like, a lot of times people find the grip and they just play it through their, you know, for decades, really. I mean, I don't think Tiger Woods has changed his grip in the entire time since he's been a junior to today. And that grip is still manufactured. And that's, you know, I'd probably say that's been one of the shortcomings of the category. I mean, it's a lot of the major players, they don't innovate very much. They tend to, you know, continue to make the same thing. I mean, two of the most popular grips these days still are, they're over 20 years old, close pushing to 30 years old. I mean, it's the same grip that was originally introduced in the mid 90s or early 2000s, those kinds of things. So there hasn't been a lot of innovation. So without that, there's not a lot of excitement for the category and not a lot of, you know, things to talk about. I get a kick out of looking at THP and the community. I love seeing, you know, the what's in the bag from all of the community members. And to me, I tend to take that a little bit personally, you know, with the WMX side of things, because as you read the what's in the bag, there's very few that talk about their grips. They'll talk about every single club they got in the bag. They'll talk about the shaft. They'll tell you the flex and the weight of that shaft. And then the next thing you'll read is what rangefinder they use or what cart bag or what bag they use. But there's nothing about the grip. Now, that's not 100%. There are some people that I've seen that detail the grip, but that I'd probably say it's 80% don't mention anything about the grip. And that's an issue with the category. It's something that has lacked excitement historically. And that's really, you know, that was part of the foundation for WMX and the founder. They started off in South Korea about 2 or 3 years ago. And that the lack of innovation and the opportunity within the space is what inspired them to start the company and really get on this journey of trying to innovate in the category. I mean, going back to, you know, my early days at Dunlop, I dug this club out. It's an old persimmon wood that I got. It's an old Dunlop. I don't know the history of it, but if I was to guess, I'd probably say it's from the 50s or 60s, but it's got a cord grip on here from back then that, you know, who knows, it's probably 75 years old now or whatever, but yeah, you know, it's funny. It's got cord all the way. It might be hard to see in the camera, but all the kind of the white here is the cord within the grip, and then the electrical tape kind of sealing it off at the bottom. But you know, cord technology, you know, we've seen there's a original patent for the cord concept dating back to 1935. So it's almost 100 years old. So, you know, the technology within grips has lacked. There's been very few significant innovations. And so, again, that was a lot of the inspiration behind Kim Wan and her team to get into the category and try to do something different and, you know, and really bring some different performance as well as style to the game as well, too.
Yeah, let's talk about the core of that, the decision to go to market to pursue something. What caused Kim to want to go down that rabbit hole, if you will, and why did she feel like there was such a significant gap in the space?
Yeah, so it goes back again to the COVID boom, in terms of there's this increase of participation during the COVID kind of lockdown, shutdown, if you will. Playing golf, obviously, an outdoor activity that people can distance and play. And so that's where that was really her first experience, exposure to golf. She was not, you know, she didn't grow up playing golf or anything like that. The COVID boom is kind of what got her into golf and observing the category. You know, in South Korea, there's a lot of screen golf as well, too, or simulator golf, as we might say here. But so she got kind of wrapped around the, you know, enthralled with the game, as a lot of people did with the COVID boom, saw an opportunity within the grip space. And it just so happens her father is a engineering injection molding expert that has been in the healthcare industry for decades. And so he's perfected his craft of materials and injection molding expertise within the medical industry. And so think about medical, there's a lot of different materials, a lot of different intricacies, if you will, in the injection molding and specialties. And so they started kind of brainstorming the opportunity and, you know, looking at what was out there and kind of looking at designs and started to kind of self-teach themselves around golf and golf grips. And, you know, he was able to see the shortcomings of the technology that was out there that really, you know, going back to the old club that I have here, it's quite dated manufacturing techniques that are used currently today. And so he saw the opportunity. The healthcare industry is very innovative. They're always trying to do new things and enhance products within the healthcare industry. And that's, you know, obviously there's a lot more importance in the healthcare industry than there is golf, but they saw this fun opportunity within the golf space, and kind of the rest is history. And her father, you know, he's a mastermind. I have fun talking to him quite regularly as we kind of brainstorm ideas and look at different things. And you know, he's quite the smart genius when it comes to manufacturing, and the speed at which he turns things around is quite impressive. And we just recently introduced our midsize option within the Hyper, and you know, it was only, you know, less than a 6 month window that he worked on that, which again, in my history of doing injection mold and kind of turning things around, it's usually 12 to 18 months or longer for something like that. And to be able to, the big innovation behind that one was to be able to introduce it at the same weight as a standard size grip, you know, between how quickly he turned it around and optimized the weight to be the same of a standard size. It's been quite impressive to work with them, to be such a young company and kind of young within golf as well too. And that's really where I've been able to help bridge some expertise with them, that they don't have that background within the golf space. And I bring that 25 years of history to be able to help support them here in the US.
Well, I also think there's a big benefit to that. There's a freedom to look at it in a different way when you're not sort of encumbered by the narrow path that oftentimes is what we end up with. And I want to go a little bit deeper with that. You mentioned injection molding, and it's, from what I understand, there's a 6-step process to these grips. And I think that's really interesting, because when I think about a grip, usually where I fall away on some of the options that are available is they're just a little too complex. There's a little too much going on. Mm-hmm. And with that comes compromise. It's something we'll talk about later in things like torque. So the ability to introduce something that feels better or feels competitive without causing concessions, you know, is quite a great thing. So 6-step injection molding, what exactly is happening in that process?
Yeah, definitely. So with their grip technology, the first opportunity is they really wanted to establish themselves with a high performance offering. And typically, when it comes to high performance, historically, that's been more of a firmer grip for the anti-torque properties that you mentioned. And so firmer grips tend to have cord. The cord, for those who may or may not be aware, the cord is a very thin layer that's really sitting up at the surface. It's not much thicker than, call it a coin, if you will, in terms of the thickness of that cord material. And what it does, it functions to act as the same way that maybe rebar does in concrete, is to strengthen the rubber. And so with that strengthening, it's meant to reduce the anti-torque properties of the grip. And so that's why you tend to see a lot of better players play a cord grip, whether it's a full cord grip or a hybrid grip. A lot of the better players are going to use cord because it probably delivers two things to the better player. It's going to give them the anti-torque properties, stability in their hands. And then the second thing it's going to do is it's going to give them more feedback. When they strike it, particularly better players, they want to know to hit off the toe, hit off the heel, to hit a sweet spot, whatever. The firmer that grip is, it's actually transmitting more vibrations and feedback into the hands of the player. So those are really kind of the main things that typically a cord is going to do for you. And if you think about that construction, it's firmest on the outer edges, right where your hands are, and it's going to be kind of a more typical rubber underneath that. And so while it's really firm and stable on the outside, the interior of it is still kind of the mass of rubber. And if you look at the grip, obviously at the top part of it, that's where you're going to have the most amount of material. And this is where you put the most amount of stress on the grip in your swing. If you're a right-handed player, your upper hand, if you will, is where you're going to have the most kind of twist and action. I love watching the shot tracers or the swing tracers of the various professionals, and you see just how much the club is moving and rotating and spinning, as they go back and swing it through, obviously at a tremendous amounts of speed. So the concept with WMX was to flip the script on that, if you will. And if your goal is to eliminate torque, then let's put the firmer piece not on the outside edges, let's put it on the inside closest to the shaft. And so that's where their multi-step injection process is. It starts with this inner layer that runs the entire length of the grip, and it tapers out, at the top hand side of the grip as well too here. So you get that firmer compound, that firmer material on the interior to help eliminate torque. And then to soften that, there's a really thin layer on the top, which is the exposed piece that you see on the outside. And so it's a softer material on the outside. It's not super soft. It's when you say soft, words like soft and firm, it's all relative to what somebody might be comparing to. But so it's softer on the outside edges. So this is meant to be closer to the performance of a cord grip, but without that harshness feel that a lot of players, that's really most people that don't play a cord grip, and even, better players as they get, play golf longer and age more, go from the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour, they might, go to a non-cord grip because it's easier on their hands as they age. And so this is meant to provide all the benefits of a cord grip, but without that harsh surface feel that's going to tear up your glove or tear up your hands and all those kinds of things. And so they really wanted to flip the script on that and improve that performance factor with something that was totally new design and something different. Where the last point I'd make is, this is, to my knowledge, I think one of the few grips, if any, particularly of a rubber compound material that does not have any paint on it. So with their technology, when you see any kind of coloring like their logo or this white ring or the coloring here on the cap, that's all from that interior layer, that interior firm layer. There is no paint. Most companies are using some type of paint, whether it be for the logo, any kind of lines you might see, your bands you might see on certain grips, that's all paint material that's added after. And, it's not so much about the paint itself, as it just introduces a lot of inconsistencies, if you will, to the texture surfacing feel. Because basically when you're painting something, you can't always control the coverage and how much is removed. And so, you can quite often pick up a lot of grips that have a lot of paint on there, and you'll notice from grip to grip that paint coverage is inconsistent, which, it's the little things, for WMX. And some people may say, oh, that doesn't matter, but it's kind of like saying the dimples on the golf ball don't matter, and all the entries, as much machining and attention of detail that goes into the texture design, you know, to have that altered in a post-processing, you know, kind of secondary process, those do make an impact. It makes an impact on the performance from club to club if you've got different feel, as well as the durability factor of it. So there's a lot of things that, you know, it's getting into the details, if you will, that probably most people may not, you know, choose to get into, which I totally respect. But, you know, it's no different than the intricacies of, like I said, dimples on a golf ball or the spacing of grooves on a club head. All those little things matter, particularly when, you know, you've got the grip is your only point of contact with the golf club.
So how much of a window do you have when it comes to adjusting that material and introducing torque? Because there are plenty of products out there that support a much softer golf experience, a much easier experience for those with like arthritis or something that you know they want as little shock value as it comes with. Are you able to manipulate that, and have you been looking at ways to solve that in an even deeper way?
Yeah, so that is something, as I mentioned, their initial offering was meant to be more high performance, and call it, you know, typically you're going to have kind of three categories of grip in terms of a firm grip. You know, on the other end, you've got your soft grip, and then, you know, kind of a mid-firm, medium in between. And their technology probably fits in that medium to firm, you know, side of things today. There is opportunity to get on the softer side. That's something that we're working on. You know, I don't know that we've got anything, you know, right coming soon. We do have some other things coming soon, but maybe not to address that softer side of things. That's an interesting category too. You know, specifically on the softer side of things, the most popular tends to be a polyurethane construction. So again, not sure how familiar everybody is with polyurethane, but you tend to see a lot of polyurethane on putter grips. And it's, for lack of a better example, it's like the wrap style that you might see on a tennis grip or some youth baseball bats, those kinds of things. It's that really softer material, shock absorbing material, to your point. The downside, that material works great to do what you're talking about of shock absorbing. And probably the biggest downside is it degrades quite quickly. And not even just from a, you know, call it tearing and those kinds of things, but the tackiness of it wears out very fast. And that's really why it's so popular within tennis and baseball, is you've got this mass of a structure underneath that very thin polyurethane layer. You can quickly take it off and wrap a new one on and be on your way, you know, in a matter of minutes, versus golf, you don't really have that luxury. You kind of have to take the whole thing off and put a new one on. And so they are popular on that comfort side, but that's something where we're still working on some innovation, because it is a balance. Anything, there's trade-offs with anything, just like with golf balls. If you're going to have a firm golf ball, is it going to be faster? Yes, but it's probably going to spin more. You have a soft golf ball, is it going to be slower? So you're going to trade off the feel of softer for a slower ball, and probably going to spin less as well too. So there's trade-offs, and the same thing with the grip. The softer grips, you are going to introduce more of that torque factor. You know, anytime you make something softer, it's going to have more twisting to it. And so that's where, you know, like, so WMX is focused on innovation first. And we think we have some pathways to that, but don't have it quite yet. But that's definitely a huge opportunity, because within golf, as you said, you know, there's a lot of people that are looking for that shock absorbing factor. And, you know, there's definitely an opportunity there. And that's, you know, one thing I'll mention. I have seen some of the comments, you know, not just specifically to WMX, but just call it grip commentary on the forum itself. And grips are, they're probably as complicated, if not more complicated, than shafts. Meaning, I see a lot of comments around shafts, like how company to company they measure is different from the other company, and R-flex to S-flex to torque, whatever it may be. It's very true with grips, but there really is no general categorization. Like, there is no, outside of size, you know, you're not going to see, you know, is this meant to be soft? Is this meant to be firm? Unless you're really kind of dialed in, you know, of a user or whatever. And so a lot of times when people try something new, it's relative to what you might have been coming from. And today, like I said, soft, medium, firm is all over the place, and what companies kind of design their products to be. And then what's gotten even more all over the place is taper profiles. And there's some companies that they do label their taper profiles, and there's other companies that they don't, you know, or they might use some internal codes that most people don't understand. And so, you know, between traditional taper to, you know, enhanced, you know, profile tapers, and there's a lot of variation out there that, again, it kind of depends, you know, what you're coming from and what you're looking for as a player. Our WMX products, our initial ones, have been designed to be started off of traditional tapers. So our standard size and our mid size is more of that traditional taper. And we do have a reduced taper product that I can tease a little bit that's we're working on and we're very close to. That should be available hopefully later this year. And so we recognize that there's a big trend towards that reduced taper profile. And you know, so again, another thing that, you know, the team over in South Korea, they haven't been working on that very long, and it's probably going to be another project that's, you know, produced within 6 months as well too. So, but getting to the greater point of taper profiles are all over the place. And there's definitely, we recognize that that's a gap in our product portfolio and something that we plan to introduce here very shortly.
That's awesome. And moving quickly, which is not the easiest thing to accomplish. So it's great to see that not only that you're looking for alternatives, but the feedback's being heard. And you're certainly taking full advantage of that.
Yeah, that's, you know, going back to their background, they were founded in South Korea. And I know there's quite a few members of the forum community that maybe have had a chance to go to Korea or Japan as well, too. And products tend to be different over there. It's definitely a lot of more fashionable side of things, which you can see the color ranges that we have. We can do 36 different colors tomorrow, you know, kind of thing. And then within that, you know, within our hyper line, we have the mix and match of different colors. I mean, I forget what the math is on 36 times 36, but, you know, there's a well over 1,000 color combinations we could do that. You know, I think I've seen some threads on the forum where there's some Crusher fans, you know, we've got the Crusher grip that we could do for Bryson and Charles Howell and team. We could do, you know, the Legion grip for Rom and Terrell Hatton, you know, if you will. But so their coloring is phenomenal. But in South Korea and Japan, people's hands tend to be smaller. So there wasn't a need for a mid-size grip, a reduced taper grip, all those kinds of things. And so that's where the company started from. And, you know, they're really more into undersize and standard size there. And that's where we initially launched here in the U.S. with those two sizes, but they fully recognized they wanted to get into the U.S. space, and whether it's larger sizes or reduced taper profiles, they recognized the need to keep expanding the product portfolio moving forward.
Well, tell me about durability. I think that's one of the leading discussions on grips. Well, other than do I really have to change my grips, is how durable are they? How long can I have them in the bag where I can have full faith in the product expectations, and am I getting my money's worth is always the biggest conversation point. So when it comes to WMX, what is the expectation on durability and how much of a focus is that?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. That is a big difference from where their innovation lies compared to traditional grips that are out there. So I don't know if a lot of people are aware or not, but, you know, some of the most popular grips that are out there, particularly if it's got some kind of paint on it, they go through what's called a buffing process or sanding process to kind of finish the processing of the grip, which that does two things. One, it introduces another variable to altering the texture from what it was designed. I mean, you're taking material off of the product. So there's potential for texture variation through that process. The other thing it does is it introduces weight tolerability factors, because you're controlling how much material you're taking off versus how much you're leaving. And, you know, the evenness of that from grip to grip can be challenging as well, too. So there are two big differences. And then the other thing with grips that are buffed or sanded is you're taking a protective layer off of the top of the grip from when it comes out of the mold. And so it does change the feel of the grip. That can be a positive. And I'm not going to say that they're all negatives with that. It can, you know, certainly help the feel, but you're taking a protective layer off, and that's why they have durability issues. And when you take that protective layer off, it increases its rate of exposure to UV and how quickly it's going to start to glaze and kind of feel slick and those kinds of things. And, you know, whether it's UV light in a retail store to UV light, obviously playing golf or, you know, practicing on the range or laying the clubs down while you putt, whatever it is, every time that grip is exposed to light, it's starting to grade. And so that was where WMX saw another opportunity with their material innovation, is a resistance to that is much smaller. And through the advanced materials that they use, you can play much longer under UV light without having that same level of impact that a traditional grip is going to have. And so, you know, wear is going to depend on a lot of factors. How often you play, how often you practice, are you leaving your clubs in your trunk? Are you taking care of them? Are you cleaning them? Those kinds of things. And, you know, definitely too, you know, the bags can play a piece in that as well too. Some of the bigger wear factors on a grip is taking it in and out of the grip and out of the bag, and because it's rubbing up against everything else that's in there. And you know, so there's a lot of factors go into it, but we believe that our grips last 2 to 3x, if not longer, you know, again, depending on parameters compared to a buffed or sanded traditional grip. And so, you know, there's a lot of advantages to the grip performance. So they wanted to enhance the performance itself, increase the durability factor, and increase, you know, the style factor options as well too, with the different colors that you can see. And so that was really the core of what some of their goals were. The other thing I think that a lot of people don't recognize too, when you do buff or sand a grip, taking that kind of top skin off, and that's what exposes the cord in a lot of reasons, like that's where the cord is kind of popping up to the surface when you're taking that material off. But when you do that, that also introduces moisture absorption. So a lot of people say, okay, this is going to help me, moisture wicking might be the marketing phrase or whatever, but really the basis of cord was meant for torque performance, that rebar factor, if you will. But then, you know, if it's soaking it up, it's sitting on the surface, it's sitting on that cord, it's sitting in the rubber. And so, you know, depending on if you play in the morning and you're laying your clubs and they get wet or whatever, and it's soaking into the grip itself. You can't wipe it off. And or if you're playing in, you know, rain conditions, as it's raining, it's soaking into the grip, which we've got some kind of tests that we're running. It's like that it's soaking up water. And when you sump, it's just like a sponge. You soak up a sponge with water, it's going to weigh more than it did when it didn't have water in it. And so the same thing is happening with those traditional grips in that way. And so depending on how much moisture you're exposing to, you are altering the performance of it, not only, you know, from water sitting in the grip itself, but the weight of that water. Whereas the WMX, they don't absorb water. They do have great traction, but, you know, if you give it a quick wipe, you know, with the towel or whatever, that water is gone. It's not going to absorb, you know, whether it's sweat or whether it's water or dew or whatever it is, it's going to be gone and back, you know, probably going to feel tackier than it originally did. Whereas a traditional buff grip, if you try to take a towel to it, you might pull a little bit of that water out, but most of it is sitting inside the grip. I should have screenshotted or caught it. It's probably a couple of years ago now. There was a PGA Tour player that played, I think it might have been the Scottish Open or one year where it rained a lot over there. And the caddy, you know, took a picture, posted to social media that he was having to dry out the grips after the round. And that's really, if you play in rain, you're going to have to dry out the grips to get them back to the original kind of weight and spec that they were before they got wet.
I like you're just casually giving thousands of golfers a massive complex right now about how they care for their grips.
Well, you know, it goes back to it's a category that a lot of people don't pay a lot of attention to, unfortunately. And like I said, there hasn't historically been a lot of innovation, you know, within the category. And you know, that's where, you know, with our midsize offering, with the being a 50 gram grip, the same as our standard size of being 50 grams grip, that a lot of people that go through a custom fitting, that's changing out the grip is, you know, or playing the grip that you plan to play through your fitting is highly unlikely. You're going to go in and whatever the fitting process, you're going to find this TaylorMade head versus a Callaway head, Titleist head, whatever. You're going to try this shaft, you know, UST Mamiya shaft versus somebody else. And the likelihood that they're going to have a midsize grip on those shafts when you try it is very low. And you're going to spend an hour getting fit for the driver, and then they're going to come to the end and they're going to say, what grip do you want it? And you're going to say XYZ, and it might weigh 60 grams, it might weigh 50 grams, it might weigh 70 grams. And so advanced fitters, you know, and club builders, they'll account for that, but there's a wide range that's not something that they're super in tune to. And at the end of the day, it's still going to feel different than what you got fit with. And so that was really one of the motivations, again, for WMX to innovate is like, well, if we can eliminate that from a factor, you know, whether or not you were fit with the standard or midsize, at least if you pick our midsize, it's not going to change from a weight dynamic to anything that you got fit with. And so that was, again, a motivation, you know, for them with their innovation around the midsize performance and where, again, they see a lot of opportunity within the category to do things differently, which, you know, I don't know if I said earlier, 1000% agree with you of like, there's this, call it, you know, ignorance, if you will, or the category, if you will, you're not constrained by historicals and the way, you know, we've always done something for decades kind of thing. And so the freshness perspective that they bring with their kind of engineering and material excellence has been a huge asset to the development of products for the company.
Yeah. And I think part of that's a level of fear too. You get comfortable with something, and as much as you can drop a new head on it, and there's a feeling of welcomeness when you put your familiar grip on it. I think people fall back on that a lot. And then, you know, the other components certainly are there, but I think there's a level of fear of making the big change. And I think sometimes people will do it on one club or two clubs and then eventually get to the full bag when they find something. But I'm as guilty as anyone else. I've had a very similar grip on my clubs for 10 years now. In fact, they don't even make them anymore. So there's a level of desperation that exists in that. And I think we could all be a little bit better, I suppose.
Well, you know, it's we all tend to be creatures of habit, and you know, it's, you know, I do it in my daily life too. I mean, if there's a shoe brand that I feel is comfortable, the next time I need shoes, I'm probably going back to that brand, or shirt or pants, whatever it is. And, you know, so we totally get the comfort factor, or, you know, historical factor of things. Mm-hmm. That's where we're trying to really do things differently. That's, you know, going back to, you know, part of the foundation of what, when they got into this, is like, we don't want to just be different for the sake of being different. Do we think we can make this better? Because if we just make the same thing, we're not going to do anything different. And that's where, you know, it's interesting to going back to the kind of the legacy style of grips today, or the, you know, the kind of the archaic manufacturing that's still out there. I mean, that's why you can go to Amazon, type in golf grips, and you'll see basically replications of anything out there for probably, you know, a third to a quarter of the price of some of the mainstream brands or whatever. It's because it's basic technology that can be done, you know, at a very cost efficient way, and sourced. And you and I could go source and start a grip company if we wanted to, you know, and make something that looks similar to that. But, you know, that's where WMX decided to innovate and do things differently. And really, you know, that's one of the things, you know, definitely within the category, to your point, is people are probably slow to change, you know, within grips. You kind of get comfortable with what you have. And then that's really the big wow factor for most people, is it's one thing to see it, but when you actually put it in your hands and you're like, oh, wow, you know, that's, you know, that's where the big impact is. And that's where it's the unfortunate thing with grips too, is they degrade kind of slowly. And so we get comfortable with that feel, like the way that it felt from the last time I played, or the way it felt tomorrow, you know, when I play again, it's probably going to feel very similar. But then it's, once you feel a fresh grip, it's like, oh, wow, you know, maybe I did need these a little bit sooner, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, there's definitely is that out there. And that's where, and again, going back to the durability of theirs, is I think there's two waves of durability. Is there's, it's finally gotten to its end of life cycle, you know, state. But every time you play, you know, whether it's that UV light, whether it's your perspiration, whether it's, you know, maybe some residual sunscreen on your hands, whatever it is, like, it's gradually changing the performance. And there's a period of, call it fresh to end of life, and that rate of decay is much faster with a traditional grip versus a WMX grip. That rate of decay is going to be much slower before you get to that end of life cycle time period. So a lot of advantages to the material science, and the, you know, whether it's weight control, durability control, the coloring offerings. That's, we didn't touch on that. I had forgotten. That's one of the other big advantages to WMX, is historically, you change colors and kind of a rubber style grip, it's going to change the weight. So one of the worst offenders is going to be a white grip. You know, to be able to make rubber, classical traditional rubber white, you have to add a lot of extra compound to it to get it to be that bright white. But that extra compound is adding weight. And so a lot of people don't realize that. Going back to getting fit, you know, maybe you got fit with your whatever grip that was on there. It's 50 gram. You said, oh, I really like that white grip. And you have it put on, and it might weigh, you know, 10 grams heavier than the black grip version did. And so there's a lot of variation in color that's out there too. And that's one other thing that WMX has been able to solve, is got 36 colors here, and it doesn't matter which color you pick, they're all going to weigh 50 grams. And so another big advance and innovation. So, you know, I fully recognize, you know, I've seen it in the forum community, and WMX fully recognizes that our grip is not the, the least expensive, or, you know, kind of mid-price range, if you will, is certainly one of the more premiums. But yeah, between the technology that's in it, the performance, between the durability and all the things around the edges, whether it be the weight consistency, the texture consistency, we think we have a lot of advantages to those that are looking for the best performance grip out there compared to what's traditionally been available. And not to mention, you know, if you like to introduce a little style to your game, we obviously got those options as well too.
Well, how chaotic can you get with the color? Are at some point, like Christmas comes around and suddenly there's Well MX candy cane grips coming out, or like what limitations do you have there?
Yeah, right now, there's probably, they've kind of pre-developed these 36 colors that you see behind me here. And this is specific. They can do the 36 colors across the Super. The Super model is our kind of our single color body model. And then we've got the Hyper model, which is our dual color body model. And so within that, I mean, any one of these 36 colors against the other 36 colors, again, you know, this is one, you know, that'd be a fun one to do out there. Maybe not for Christmas, to your point, but a little pink and black to anything else within your imagination that can do that. But, you know, from a customization standpoint, you know, that we are working with some equipment companies now for some custom designs and some development. So they can, you know, if there's a specific request, maybe, you know, obviously at scale with an equipment company, you know, they can do that. But as we continue to evolve, I definitely see the color range looking to evolve as well too. A lot of the colors that they picked was inspirational that our founder, Kim Wan, going back to the beginning of the name of the company, Well Mix or Well MXS, it was meant to be a combination of wellness mixed with sport. And so the idea of being outdoors, colors of nature. So a lot of the colors that we have been inspired by the colors of nature, which is why you'll see the naming conventions that we have on some of our colors, like wood gray. And, you know, so a lot of the different color combinations that we have are meant to be kind of playing off of the colors of nature, if you will. So, but a lot of room there. And that's the beauty of their technology is, you know, it's almost limitless to what we can do. We just have to, you know, if there's a new color we want to add, we just have to spend a little bit of time to optimize that shade and get it introduced.
Yeah, I read Moody Indigo and I pretty much hit me in the forehead. Like, that's pretty Canadani. And Moody Indigo, I loved it. One of the things we absolutely have to talk about today before we wrap up is the material feeling in the hands. There's a couple different structural patterns that are on the outside of the grip. I've seen some wave patterns. There's also a diamond pattern that's integrated into, I believe, the Super. So landing on some of those are a little bit different. How do you end up there, and why those specifically?
Yeah, so starting with the Hyper, which is the dual color model, this will be the six-step injection process, and that has the wave texture pattern that you alluded to. And so it's more of a, call it a embossed, or sorry, debossed kind of texture design. And so it gives a little bit of a different feel to it. And that's where that one was meant to give, you know, kind of the feel of a full cord grip without the harshness of a full cord. And so that one's got that consistent wave texture across the entire body of it. And it's a continuous wave pattern. Like it's almost like a game of Plinko, if you might remember that from the old Price is Right show or whatever. But the idea that there's no kind of, you know, seams, if you will, through the texture that allows the moisture to kind of easily escape or easily wipe off with a towel or whatever. And so there's nowhere for the moisture to kind of get hung up, if you will. So again, thinking about the Plinko, it's ways for the moisture to escape. And so that wave texture pattern, like I said, is meant to kind of simulate a full cord design. And then the Super, it's got two textures to it. So in the top hand, the single color grip is the Super. In the top hand, it has that diamond texture pattern. And that's really meant to kind of simulate a little bit of a cord feel as well, too, without the harshness of cord. So it's an aggressive texture for that upper hand, going back to in the swing, you're going to put the most force in that upper hand up there. And then they designed a little bit of a softer, call it a classical texture design in the lower hand. But it might look like a traditional texture in the lower hand, but it is quite different. You're not going to be able to see it on screen here, but if you look at some of the pictures on our website, it's connected too. It's continuous. Like each one of those little texture patterns, there's a little channel in between each one of them that kind of keeps it rotating around. And so that's meant to aid with the moisture escape and wicking as well too. So that's where, again, trying to do things more advanced and different. And that's the beauty of their product as well too. It's coming straight out of the mold and it's good to go. There is no secondary finishing that's out there. There's no paint that's applied. There's no buffing or sanding that's going to alter the weight, alter the textures. These are as precision molded as intended texture designs. And so that's really where they're able to separate themselves too in the performance of consistent from part to part, you know, whether it's weight, whether it's texture, all those things are going to marry themselves up to be the utmost consistent finish available out there.
Yeah, it definitely has a very visual tactile component to it on the Super. I personally like the consistency, even though it's funny because you're looking at two different colors, but the consistency of the Hyper all the way across. Would you explain the difference of what the bottom hand needs versus the top hand on the grip? Like, it makes a lot of sense. And I totally recognize the value there, which I think is really interesting. Are you continuing to look at different alternatives for that? Or are you pretty much focused on that currently?
Definitely we see opportunity within texture, you know, innovation and doing some different things. We don't have anything necessarily on the horizon right now. You know, quite honestly, they've been focused on supporting kind of the bigger sizes here in the U.S., trying to get into the putter space as well, we feel like is a big opportunity. We haven't really touched on putter grips. I mean, that could be its own show. You know, I think a lot of people get into grips and I don't know, they're so dynamically different. I mean, it's as different as your driver is to your putter in terms of everything that you do with it. Same thing is true for the grips. There's a lot more shape opportunity that you can do with grips. I mean, or sorry, putter grips specifically, like even, again, going back to the forum, I saw a recent post somebody was doing about, you know, talk about your favorite grip. It was all about swing grips. I mean, you could do a separate post that talk about your favorite putter grip. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that go into that. But really kind of size profiles and getting the putter. But we definitely see, you know, innovation opportunity on the texture side. We certainly don't think we've achieved the end all be all, but probably something that would be on the long range roadmap.
The putter component was the one thing that really interested me because on the website, it just says coming soon. So, of course, you know, Unobtainium, of course, this is the first thing I want to know more about. But I also feel like the structure of your process, if you can resolve weight issues going from standard size to mid-size, it gives me a lot of confidence that I can get into a slightly larger or even significantly larger putter grip without making concessions to the overall weight balance. So I played a fairly traditional grip for a long time. So I assume that's all. You're nodding pretty aggressively for those listening in audio. It sounds like Brandon and team are definitely making big considerations there.
Putter grips are a tremendous opportunity. And going back to call it the lack of innovation and, you know, trying to keep a long story short, if you will, historically, you call it up until, I don't know, maybe 2010 or something like that. Most putter grips were thinner style profiles, you probably didn't replace them very often. You were more likely to get a new putter than you were to replace your grip. And then the advancement of larger sizes came into play. When they first came out, you know, for some people that really, you know, been following the tour for some time and know the name KJ Choi, he started using a really large oversized rubber grip and he had some success and momentum. And he kind of got this idea about maybe there's a better way to putt with an oversized grip. And for most tour players, it didn't work because that the one that KJ Choi was using, I don't remember the exact weight, but directionally, I mean, it looked like a brick. It was so big and it weighed like a brick. You know, it was probably 3 to 4x the weight of a traditional grip. And most other tour players, like, I can't deal with this weight balance, you know, kind of thing. And then now you fast forward to today and that's been solved in the form of a polyurethane structure that has a really light foam, we call it an underlist, you know, kind of the undercarriage of the underneath that polyurethane skin. It's a foam material. It's super shock absorbing. It's basically tennis shoe foam, if you will. So you think about tennis shoes, it's meant to kind of help absorb shock. I don't know if that was what they intended for a putter grip, but that's what it's doing. And so that's where a lot of people have struggled going to the oversized grip, is the putting requires the most deft amount of feedback and distance control. And like, if there's one club in your bag that you want to get the most amount of feedback from, it's your putter. You know, whether I'm doing a Texas wedge off the green to, you know, a 30-foot putt down to the knee knocker, you know, 3 foot to win the match or whatever, I need to be able to control my distance. And that's where a lot of people have struggled with those oversized grips. Now, you know, I think that those came out maybe around 2015 or something like that. So again, we're pushing a decade plus of basically the same technology performance of trying to address the weight with that foam underlist and the polyurethane. And it does that, but it introduces distance control problems, the feedback, it introduces moisture control. I've done a lot of conversations with various PGA Tour players that, you know, they play this style of grip today because there is no alternative. If you want to play a larger grip at an ideal weight, there is no alternative. That's, you're either going to play that or you're not. You're going to use something more traditional if you're focused on the weight side of things. And so I've asked a lot of PGA Tour players, what would you change? And without skipping a beat, they say the moisture absorption on this sucks. Mm. You know, and so whether they've got sweaty hands or they're playing in the rain, like it's the same thing as with a buffed or sanded, you know, swing grip, that's absorbing moisture. And so you get a lot of, I've seen even comments, I think, on the THB community, like it feels slimy or whatever. Like when it gets wet, it doesn't feel good. And so, like I said, the feedback is an opportunity, the moisture controls feedback. And then last but not least is the durability factor of it. I mean, these things wear out super fast. They tend, because they're oversized, going back to that in and out of the bag where they wear out, they start. I've played in tournaments with people and they've got one of these grips on. And it's literally like there's an inch of it draped up, hanging, you know, just dangling in the breeze, you know, kind of thing or whatever. And, you know, which technically, depending on how much of a, you know, persnickety you are about the rules, that's illegal. Mm. So for those that, you know, I don't know if some people might remember that happened in a Ryder Cup not too long ago. I think it was Harris English. His polyurethane grip had that dangling material or whatever. And Davis Love had to famously do some tape surgery to it before he went out and played in a singles match or whatever. And so the durability factor, which that one's a bigger one, not so much call it getting to the extreme of like material hanging off or whatever, but that decay period, it decays rapidly. I mean, once you get a fresh one on, I mean, it's not much longer past the fourth or fifth round that it's not going to feel anything like when you first put it on. And so we see that as a big opportunity as well too. And that's why, you know, thinking back to the UV light is another bad thing for a polyurethane grip. That's why some people may not realize if you go into a retail store, every single polyurethane grip is going to be in some type of protective packaging. Mm. And they have to do that to maintain, because it's under UV light and the materials they're protecting, you know, up until the installation part. But as soon as it gets installed, you know, it starts to, that rapid rise of decay starts almost immediately, particularly once you get on the golf course. So addressing feedback, addressing moisture, addressing the durability. So the WMX solution is dynamically different than anything else that's out there. You know, it may not be for everybody. I'm sure it's going to have sticker shock to it as well too. But when you factor in, you know, if you keep your grips fresh and replace them, I mean, do you want to replace it three times? Which it's not just about, call it the cost factor of replacing it. It's, you know, whether you do it yourself or you're going to take it somewhere, that's three more processes that you're going to have to stop, cut something off, put something on, you know, all the things that are introduced, or whether you're taking it to a store or somewhere else to do it, whatever it is. So, you know, that's some of the things that they're going to try to address for their technology. But there's tremendous, very long-winded answer, I suppose. There's tremendous opportunity in the putter space that it's just sitting there for like two. There's a lot of shortcomings. The biggest thing that the oversized polyurethane addressed was solving weight, but then they reintroduced, you know, a multitude of other issues that are opportunities to make better.
I think the biggest fear, and I'll speak about this personally, is cutting off a putter grip is so much different than cutting off a 7-iron grip, because there's no guarantee you're going to get that next grip exactly in the same position. So when I look for a putter grip, the first thing I want is durability. I want something I can have on there for years and still feel good about it in year three and not have to worry about adjusting my stroke ever so slightly, because it's such a finite game. And the design of a putter grip is to line you up, help line your putter up. It's not like a seven iron where you can go logo up, logo down, logo side. It's just not like that. So there's a level of fear I think exists. And I'm not saying everyone is like that uses those types of grips, but I totally understand being willing to let that thing fall apart before making a change.
You make a great point. I mean, that is another factor for sure, is why people wait as long as they do, is you feel like you might be down. And particularly, a lot of it certainly has to do with how well you're putting as well too. But the benefit, to your point, you know, you can look at it both ways and not changing out something older when you do, you know, try something new that, you know, in the case of WMX, it's going to be set it and forget it, you know, kind of thing, versus something I've got to mess with two or three more times, you know, make sure it's dialed in the way that I want it to. But so definitely a lot of opportunity in the putter space. And to your point, I mean, most people, the other interesting thing with putters is, you know, it's one of those things that most avid golfers have got more than one. You know, whether it's that extra one in the trunk for, you know, when you got to put one of your putters in timeout, or you got one in the office or the basement or the simulator room or whatever, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, we're not focused on beauty of us being young, is like the replacement cycle is not something that we're focused on, you know, whereas some other companies they tend to talk about that, you know, because that keeps the revenue stream the way that they want it to be. But for us, we're focused on innovating first and improving performance and improving durability and making sure we've got the best product out there available.
I love it. Brandon, what a fun conversation it's been today. Having experienced the grips briefly myself, I'm very impressed with them. I can't wait to see some of these innovations that are coming. I look forward, especially with THPers, they're always talking about product, they're always trying it, and the more people that get them in the bag, like I've seen people take them in their backpack places to make sure they had the right grips to put on. So there's clearly a level of quality that exists there, and it's been fun following the ride so far.
Yeah, likewise. And I appreciate you guys having us on and letting us tell a little bit more about the story. And again, we're big fans of the community. We monitor and see what people are saying, and we enjoy the banter. We you know, it's been a great resource for us to help make things better, you know, as well too. I mean, we want to hear what people are looking for and the things they're looking to gain out of a grip, and whether that's putter grips or swing grips. And so we look forward to incorporating that in future designs, and big fans of the community and love to stay engaged with you.
Awesome. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Don't look too aggressively at your grips, but at least think about it. Are they in good shape? Could you do better? And if you could, why not WMX? Give them a try. See what happens. You never know. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown back here with another Shaft University. This week's question is about our putter shaft line. So obviously True Temper makes a ton of steel putter shafts. You're probably playing one without even knowing it. We also make a line of graphite putter shafts. So first, on the steel fiber side, we have a steel fiber putter shaft. A lot of you are probably familiar with our steel fiber line of irons. Same technology, just put into a putter shaft. So you have that steel fiber wind on the outside for steel-like stability, but with some graphite feel to it. Over on the Acra side, we actually have a couple options for you. The first one is Sync. That's got a spread toe like you might see on some high-end driver shafts wrapped around the full length of the putter shaft. What does that do? Ultra-high stability, ultra-low torque, one of the lowest torque graphite putter shafts out on the market. Over on the Acra side also, we have our TZP line, which just came out. That comes in both a red and a green. Those two shafts are almost identical, except for down at the tip section, where one is slightly stiffer than the other, depending on the kind of feel you prefer at impact. Go check those out on our website. We'll talk to you guys next time.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.